This is Andrew Kate.
And this is Ryan Capuano.
And welcome to another edition of the Death of Cinema podcast.
In today's episode, Tom Cruise becomes a drug/gun runner in American Made, while Emma Stone and Steve Carell compete in an epic, historic battle of the sexes.
And we're going to start this week's episode by talking about American Made, Doug Liman's new film starring Tom Cruise. And obviously, at the end of last week's episode, Ryan was pleading that we have another good Tom Cruise performance. And I think it's definitely a good performance. The movie is good, but it's not more than that. And I'll be honest, my feelings about this film are pretty similar, actually, to my feelings about sort of both films in general. As I feel like they're actually weird mirror images of each other, even though on the surface they may not appear to be. Whereas I feel like both of these films are taking sort of, you know, this classic sort of historical story and just sort of making it a breezy Hollywood film or whatever. And that is definitely the case with American Made, where, and I've seen a few critics mention this, how Tom Cruise feels the most relaxed he's been in a movie in so long or whatever. And I think he is really enjoyable in this film. It wouldn't rank among his greatest performances or anything like that. I feel like the trailers took away some of those classic charisma moments, like from experiencing for the first time, the trailer sort of gave those away. So it wasn't as fresh in that sense. But I thought Tom Cruise gives a good performance. And what I really liked about the film was some of Doug Liman's choices in terms of ways to just sort of streamline the story. Obviously, as I said, it's a pretty breezy film for the subject matter or whatever. And if you're looking for something more in depth, obviously this probably won't satisfy you in that way, as it's just more classic Hollywood entertainment. But I think he did a good job of making it feel like a film of a previous period or whatever, just from simple things like the logo and even just the end credits, just simple things like that, that just sort of frame the story in such a way that makes it feel sort of a different time, even though the film itself maybe doesn't. And one sort of, just sort of jumping up before I turn it over to you, Ryan, one thing I wanted to briefly mention is that I felt like there was actors in this movie that were just completely wasted. Like, it was just like they were there, which is something else that applies to our other film. But this film more to a degree, because there's a couple actors in particular, like Jesse Plemons and Lola Kirk, who are in the movie for a purpose I'm not entirely sure of. Like, they set, like, Jesse Plemons up as this, essentially, Tom Cruise gets sent to Arkansas for his base of operations, and Jesse Plemons is this, like, sheriff, and he's, like, you literally expect, like, oh, maybe he's gonna interact with Tom Cruise's character in some way, and Lola Kirk is the thankless wife. She has, like, one line, and this is, like, an actress who's on the rise or whatever. I just don't understand. Like, I feel like some of this movie was cut in some way, because I can't see these actors taking these roles on, like, that are just thankless, where they don't even interact with Tom Cruise. They're sort of there for one scene, you know, and then it's like, oh, I was just like, that's strange. But I'll turn it over to you before we move on.
Yeah, this film really definitely seemed like a victim of the editing more than anything. It's kind of, there are two different movies kind of conflicting against each other here. First of all, I think the trailer is a bit misleading. I was expecting something a little bit, maybe a little bit more like snarkily comedic in tone. But really what this is pretty much like a War Dogs meets Goodfellas type bullshit that's going on here. Mm-hmm. And the biggest problem I have with the film is that the Goodfellas portion, like this, you know, rags to riches, you know, oh, the good old US of A, a man can, this is the greatest country on the planet, a man can, you know, Barry Seal, the man in question, rising to fame out of sheer boredom and then getting hired by the CIA to run guns eventually to the Contras in Nicaragua, which eventually led to the Iran-Contra issue in the mid-80s, which is, so there's really just like so much going on, and then he becomes a drug runner for Pablo Escobar and company. And I don't think the film, like I said, there's a very, you say the word breezy, I think it's brief, though. I think it is its issue is that, like, these ideas aren't really fleshed out. With the Goodfellas stuff, it's like the way, you know, the wife character is just kind of there. All she does is nag him and put on fancy clothes, and that's really about where it begins and ends. The asshole brother-in-law character that is just wholly uninteresting. There's nothing about how they make Barry Seal. There's nothing about him, first of all, that makes it seem like he's the type of guy that would be inclined to want to do all these things. I mean, he just has all the hallmarks of a complete sociopath, but they don't really, I don't know if Tom Cruise doesn't quite see the character in that way, and he doesn't play it as such. And he is very good in this, but I think there are just so many ideas of what this story is actually supposed to be, and they all get lost in translation. And I think, with Doug Liman had like this has a really jarring visual style in this film too. That didn't work for me. I know other people are a little bit higher on this, and but it just seems like, you know, in certain scenes it's like, you know, one shot is, you know, done with an Arri Alexa or a Red camera, and then the next is done with like a 10-year-old $600 prosumer video camera or something like that. It's just really off-putting, and there's this garish yellow quality to it that's really supposed to make you feel sweaty, but it really just made me dizzy instead. So it's just all of the pieces butting heads against each other made this film just kind of fall flat. And I think they you know, there's like this political finger waving, and there's all, you know, there's like a brief allusion, you know, Barry Seal runs up to George W. Bush at one point when he starts working for the White House, and, you know, he's got that good old boy charm, and, you know, he's being chastised, Junior, come in the other room. And then, you know, you got the bullshit with Ollie North and all that. It's there's really just too much going on. The politics could have had a lot more sharper teeth other than, oh, this is bad finger waving and cutting back and forth between Reagan's war on drugs, and which is just, I mean, obviously there, one hand washes the other in that situation, but there was really nothing about what makes this a fascinating story on screen here.
Yeah, no, I agree. There isn't much depth to it at all. And that's sort of what I meant by sort of just a breezy Hollywood take on an issue. Like, it's not interested in exploring any of these issues in depth. It's really just like a candy color coated, just, oh, you enjoy, it's like fast food, you enjoy it, and then after it's over, you might not feel well. And I honestly, I like the film overall, but there's nothing to it. Like, it's nothing memorable. Like, it's not a movie I'm gonna sit down and rewatch and be like, oh, what a great film, or whatever. Like, Tom Cruise is good in the film, as you said, but there just isn't much to it in terms of depth. Like, it's an enjoyable film, but it just sort of, like, it's breezy, but there's nothing to it. So, like, any of the issues, they're not explored in depth. I felt like pretty much all the other actors outside of Tom Cruise, I mean, Domhnall Gleeson is really the only one who gets anything substantial. I thought it was weird how they handled his character. It felt like, at times, it felt like he should have been more part of the story, and then they just sort of brushed over, and then it's like, it's sort of like, you know, sort of what you alluded to, like, it just sort of glosses over these issues briefly and just then just moves on or whatever, before you even get any. He plays these roles, I believe his name is Caleb Landry Jones, I believe, yes, is his name or whatever, and he played these just out there deadbeat redneck, I don't know, it's just the way, just his acting style, I guess, lends itself to it or whatever, and I thought he was really quite good in the role. He actually has a role, I believe, in the new Twin Peaks as well, which is sort of similar to that, although more extreme, that's to say the least. But I don't know, it's just so weird. Like, he was just plopped into this movie, and I felt like that was literally the only thing Jesse Plemons got to do the whole movie was, oh, stop him. Oh, he saw him holding this money. It was just like, what are you doing? Like you said, you know, it had to be hacked to pieces in the editing room. But, you know, overall, it's really just, you know, you spend a couple hours with this character of Tom Cruise. It's enjoyable, but there's nothing really to it. So in the end, there's nothing really all that memorable.
Yeah, and there's almost like a glib moral dubiousness to it that is really just kind of disconcerting. It really just kept me at an arm's length from the film in general. And obviously, you're dealing with some really shady government dealings, and one of the most notorious drug kingpins of all time. So obviously, there should have been a little bit more of a staunch hard line against what this evil actually was, other than like, oh, you know, this is American made, I'm the American dream or whatever the fuck. It's really, yeah, I didn't find, there are certain parts of it that play out pretty well, but overall, it nothing about this film clicked for me. It's pretty, I don't want to say it's outright awful, obviously, but it's just really, I guess it's sin is that it's really middle of the road. And there are like these some strange, I didn't like the framing device of having Tom Cruise narrate the thing as you know, video tape confessional. Like, a standard voiceover would have been a little bit easier to swallow. But and like those weird animated asides where they tried to explain what was going on in Central America, it all just was very off-putting.
Well, it was such a weird decision to do that handheld camera, because I wouldn't have an issue with it, but it was never really like established in a clear way. It was just like, oh, we jumped to a shot of, oh, Tom Cruise is just in some room somewhere, we have no idea, and he's just recording himself and narrating it. Yeah, it just felt like weird. Like, they should have set that up if they wanted it to be effective, because I have no issues with using that as opposed to voiceover, because I can see how, you know, because I thought in some of those moments Tom Cruise's performance did shine despite it sort of not being set up, where it's just a sort of playful nature of his performance, and like, it was just such an odd decision. So yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. I also wanted to bring up the ending, which is actually, I think, one of the strengths of the movie, although the way it's handled is so weird. Like you know, it ends actually on quite a dark, doesn't feel really all that dark in some way. And I actually did quite like the sort of ending sequence and how it was shot, where they had like his car pulling into these parking spaces like over and over again, without getting into spoilers, because I don't want to tell you exactly what happens. But I thought it was a really interesting way of handling it, but just based on the tone that was established earlier on, there's nothing really to feel still in an enjoyable way. So that's kind of odd. I feel like Doug Liman's style definitely works more in just pure action spectacle blockbuster filmmaking, because he has this breezy nature, as he sort of showed in Edge of Tomorrow, Live and Die Breezy nature as a filmmaker, to really bring that home. In this film, it would have been nice to just have a bit too.
Definitely. I think the last thing I'll say about the movie is that late in the film, Slippery People by the Talking Heads plays, and it's just like such a, and that's bothered me about this film, was the really on-the-nose music. I think it's just kind of an act of sloth to try to let so many pop song choices try to tell the story for you. It just really fell flat for me, and was more a symptom of the issues I have with the film at large. But really, it's just, I don't know. I'm still going to hold out hope that maybe Tom Cruise will give us another Eyes Wide Shut or Magnolia someday. I was certainly not expecting that going in, and he more than carries the film. I think if any other actor was in it,
oh totally,
it would not have been nearly as entertaining. But as it stands, not something I'd ever go out of my way to rewatch.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, I enjoyed the film overall, but really, there's nothing to it. So it's like more like, oh, I enjoyed it on a viewing. I'll never watch it again. I'll never really think about it again, other than, you know, obviously the enjoyment of Tom Cruise.
And now we're going to turn our attention to our news story of the day. Jared Leto has been officially cast as Hugh Hefner, the recently deceased head honcho of Playboy. And he is, this film is being produced by the one and only Brett Ratner. For those of you who know the story, Brett Ratner has been trying to get a Hugh Hefner biopic made for many, many years. And of course, he finally gets it cast the minute his friend, and I use that with quotes, the minute his friend passes away, and he casts Jared Leto in the role. So clearly a great, great friend, and not someone deserving of our ire at all.
Andrew, I would just expect the same courtesy out of you, that the moment I die, you get that script made for me. This is really, Brent Ratner's a sleazy guy in general. Obviously, I'm not going to go into his history of choice language and on-set antics that it's just what you'd expect someone who still reads Playboy in the year of 2017 to act like, and I'll just kind of leave it at that. I have no strong opinion about Hugh Hefner or Playboy one way or another. Jared Leto is a very good actor, if a bit of a head case. Seemed like a nice guy that one time that I met him, but I don't fancy myself seeing this at all, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Jared Leto is obviously capable of giving good performances, but he's also capable of being the worst part of many different things he is in, which is not an original thought. Many people have said this before me, and I don't know if him starring as Hugh Hefner in a biopic is really going to get me to go to the theater, especially if, I mean, I know Brett Ratner's on as a producer, hopefully, not as a director, but who knows. But yeah, it's not exactly the type of project that inspires a lot of confidence and that you'd expect a lot from, although I'm always willing to be surprised, certainly. But with that in mind, I guess we'll transition to our second film.
Indeed, from the team that brought us Little Miss Sunshine, Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, we have Battle of the Sexes, which is the another true life tale that is this time focusing on, as far as I'm concerned, a much more worthwhile story that's worth telling, in the classic tennis match between Billie Jean King and dearly departed Bobby Riggs. This is a very, very entertaining film, much more so than American Made, at least for me. Part of that is obviously because I feel this film has a lot more heart, especially, and it's getting at an issue that is very agreeable, but still very passionate and no less important to talk about. I think Emma Stone and Steve Carell are both excellent. When the script is very by the numbers, I think they kind of elevate the material as best that they can. I think to that end, this is probably the most enjoyable Emma Stone performance for me. I think Steve Carell, so I guess my biggest, I'll get my caveats with the film out of the way first. As Andrew and I have briefly alluded to, this is a very by-the-number sports movie. It's very, there's really not a hell of a lot going on. They do their best to humanize Billie Jean King, but Bobby Riggs has just turned into a total caricature. And there's some really like dark stuff that's kind of going on just under the surface with this guy. With gambling addiction and, you know, and not to mince words, but the guy who was a pretty notorious asshole. But he did have a friendship with Billie Jean King, too, especially after this whole charade of a tennis match took place. I use the word charade, obviously. Its cultural significance is important. But this was a work. This was a total work from start to finish. But I think that the material is elevated by the performances and by the sincerity behind it. Obviously, you know, saying that, you know, women's rights, you know, women deserve equal pay, LGBTQ rights. For some reason, this is still incendiary thinking in 2017, but lo and behold, here we are. The film really does nail that, and I think the titular tennis sequence is done well enough. There's obviously, everyone knows the outcome going in, so there's absolutely no suspense whatsoever. And Steve Carell does get a couple little moments to, there's one little scene, like after he and his wife are having issues because of his gambling addiction, which is treated more as a, I don't know if you want to call it a personality defect, but just an annoying behavior more than a serious mental illness, which it actually is. You know, he puts 15 grand on himself to win this match, and there's like this little reflective shot. Linus Sindgren, the guy who did La La Land last year and won an Oscar for it, it really frames the movie nicely, and he catches like the reflection of Bobby Riggs as he's, and he just has like this really, and most of the credit goes to Steve Carell, of course, where he has like this look on his face of, you know, anguish and anger at himself. And I just, this is a case where the film actually might have even been a little bit too short. I wanted to see that a little bit more fleshed out, and you know, how he used this grand persona to try to hide these more nefarious parts of his character. But as it stands, it's a very entertaining film with a very good message, but it is a little slight.
Yeah, and like I alluded to earlier on, I felt like this film is another sort of breezy Hollywood take on a true story, although I did enjoy this film a bit more than American Made. And I just felt like there was, you know, you mentioned, you know, there's a bit of parts of the scripts that are a bit by the numbers, and that they, it felt like there could have been a bit more depth to, much as like we talked about in American Made. But the one big difference between these two films is that this film, as you sort of alluded to, it does have an emotional connection. And I particularly think the strength of this film in particular is the focus on Billie Jean's relationship with her hairdresser and the way the story is told. It's completely told through visuals. Like, there's rarely words even spoken about this relationship, and through the very distinct cinematography from Linus Sandgren, I think in particular all those scenes between Billie Jean King and the hairdresser, the way they're shot, just make you feel intimate and feel a connection. And that's something that sets the film apart or whatever. It makes you have this emotional connection. And I also want to give credit to their handling of the husband character or whatever, because I feel like in most movies, in this typical, they would try and make this character a force of antagonism, you know, to try and drum up, you know, the histrionics and stuff like that. But instead, it's really handled in a very even-handedly way, and I don't know exactly how it was in real life, but just simply in the movie, I really enjoyed the take on it, where the husband, you know, he recognizes sort of what's going on here, but he's not interested in, like, blowing up Billie Jean King, because obviously he truly loves her or whatever. And I thought that was a really nice touch or whatever. And I'll be honest, like, I know a lot of people were, you know, curious about what this film's, you know, award prospects are. I really think there's only one award prospect, and that would be Emma Stone's performance. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed Steve Carell as well, but there isn't, I don't think there's enough there to the performance, is enough there to the character, at least as constituted as you alluded to, in this film, where I don't think there's enough there. And I'm always depressed when this is the case with the Steve Carell performance, because I'm a big fan of his, and I feel like he's been overlooked on a few different occasions for truly great performances. And I think he's good here, but I think it's really Emma Stone's movie, and that's really the focus of the movie. It's really focused on Billie Jean King's perspective on this whole thing. In fact, I'll be honest, I was hoping for a few more scenes with the two, because there's only really their first interaction is in like a montage or whatever when they're at the press conference or whatever, and there's only a few different scenes, and I was kind of hoping for more of that clash and more, because I felt like, you know, it does have that breeziness to this Hollywood true story where it's like, where, you know, oh, you know, there is some, you know, obviously emotional heft to it, as we alluded to with that relationship, but
And I think in some moments, it really is just pleasing to entertain. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I was definitely very entertained by the film. But I feel like it does have some of those same flaws that American Made does, where sometimes it just sort of glosses over certain things and doesn't really, you know, maybe take into account some of the darker aspects of the story or really look at some of these aspects in depth. But I felt like the thing that sets this movie apart is really how they tell that relationship between Billie Jean King, the hairdresser, and her husband. And I thought that was really effectively handled.
It is, and who knows, maybe if they actually went with, delving deeper into the relationship between Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs, or even Bobby Riggs' personal life, that we'd probably be sitting here calling the film ambitious and bloated. So who the hell knows? Yeah. But as it stands, it just feels, I don't want to say, a complete telling of Billie Jean King's arc with that came about because of this period in her life and this particular match. And I feel like there was just more to mine. There could have been a little bit more with Bobby Riggs. And I really think the supporting cast is kind of, with the exception of the husband character and the Marilyn character, was the hairdresser. You got Sarah Silverman, who was just fucking obnoxious in everything that she touches. I hated her in this. It was not as bad as Book of Henry, of course, but this was still pretty terrible for me.
Well, I just wanted to bring that up because literally everything I've heard about everyone like thinks she's great in this movie, and I agree. I'll be honest. Maybe it's just you don't like her, because I think in this film she's more subtle than pretty much every other movie she's been in. So and don't get me wrong, I feel like she's playing the character, like she feels like this character of this previous decade. So for me, I didn't have an issue with it, but I was just gonna bring that up because I know a lot of people are like, oh, she's really enjoyable in this movie or whatever, and I think she is. I mean, I understand, like, she is very over the top obnoxious in a lot of performances, but I felt like in this particular performance, I don't think it was really all that over the top, but it felt like a real character of that time, to me, at least.
Yeah. You're right. My problem is just with Sarah Silverman as an actress in general, which is fine. Sometimes there are just some actors who don't work for you. I will say Alan Cumming is a guy that I feel is supremely talented, and he's just kind of used as a he's like the costume designer here, who's in he's everything. He's a guy to me who's very enjoyable to watch. Yes. But he is also underutilized in this film, and I think, you know, just giving Billie Jean King that pat on the back at the end, saying that, you know, someday people like us will be able to love who we love, which is, like I said, obviously that's preaching to the choir with us, but it also feels like an unnecessary emotional coda, because that's something that we could have gleaned from the actions on screen. I mean, this Billie Jean King is very clearly tortured by what the hell's going on in her life right now, and with all these new feelings coming about, and how she's finally embracing her love of her sexual attraction to women. And the 70s, obviously, this country was not particularly kind to the LGBTQ moment. Well, just put it this way. Ellen DeGeneres at one point was considered the most dangerous person in America. So, you know, take that for what you will. But I just, so it's fine. It's a nice little feel-good moment, but I also think it was unnecessary. And I love Alan Cumming. I watch him chew scenery all day. But to me, it was just, it could have been done more. And the same goes for Bill Pullman. It's pretty much a one-note take on... I can't remember his name right now. But overall, if you're a big tennis fan like me, this is something that you're probably going to get more than a little bit of enjoyment out of. I just don't go in expecting a be-all, end-all, Raging Bull-esque take on these particular individuals.
Yeah, and like I said, I feel like the real strength is their focus on the relationship and Billie Jean King's sort of different sexual attractions of different genders. And I completely agree about the ending. It just felt like totally tacked on, like, it's the classic Hollywood, trying to get you to feel this certain way or whatever. And that's sort of what I meant I felt there was some similarities between these films, because some of the, like, whereas Battle of Sexes does focus on one particular element in particular and gets you sort of emotionally invested in the character of Billie Jean King, definitely some of the other aspects and the way they sort of handle gender in some ways feels a bit breezy in its nature. And I think it makes sense for the tone they're going for. Obviously, you look to Bobby Riggs and how he's sort of, how he's sort of portrayed in this film. And, you know, overall, I definitely like the film, and I feel like Emma Stone is the real strength in particular. There's a great scene at the end. In fact, for both of the lead characters, were just them, like, in the aftermath of the match or whatever. I thought that was really effectively handled. In fact, I think that would have been a better endpoint. for the film in particular before that emotional coda at the end. But overall, I definitely like the film. I feel like Emma Stone is really the main strength of the film in particular and that relationship. But other than that, you know, a bit breezy at times, but definitely an enjoyable experience.
Definitely. It has that same heart that Little Miss Sunshine had. And honestly, you know, I'm not a huge Emma Stone fan, but I was really impressed by her. So I'd say, honestly, give it a shot. You can't go wrong with this, especially considering some of the other stuff that's out at the moment. And speaking of which, turning our attention to next week, we have one film that I'm sure will is once again talk about preaching to the choir, a very different choir in this instance, but with Denis Villeneuve's Blade Runner sequel, Blade Runner 2049. And we also were debating and banging our heads back and forth about what the second film that we should review would be. It was really a very difficult choice, but we're going to go with Stephen Frears' Victoria and Abdul because I am a glutton for punishment and because for some reason I know I'm going to go see this movie on Senior Wednesday so I can get the most out of my experience. I know I'm going to be the youngest person, and regardless of what day I see it on, I'm going to be the youngest person in the theater by a good 40 years. So whatever, I'm just going to try to enjoy it. But I don't know, I have my reservations.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you should say that you want to get the most out of your enjoyment by going to see it on Senior Wednesday. You're going to have people, you know, talking throughout the movie, giving you play-by-play. Oh, yeah. No offense to the elderly, but that is a common complaint I have about the elderly and why people always ask, oh, who's worse in the theaters, kids or the elderly? The elderly, bar none, because they're old enough, they should know better. Don't talk and give me play-by-play throughout the movie, please. And with that in mind, we'll see you guys next week.
Take care of yourselves. It's a dangerous theater out there.